The speed at which many people's lives are moving is anything but slow. In fact, many people I know are trying to exist in a world that seems to move at the speed of light. The pace that many people are keeping today might best be described as living life at breakneck speed. Do you ever feel like the world is spinning around you and you're on this treadmill you just can't get off? Of course, it's called breakneck speed because if you happen to veer off the road, you will crash and most assuredly break your neck. The result of this speed and unrelenting pressure is usually exhaustion. It might be physical exhaustion, it might be mental exhaustion, it might be spiritual fatigue, it might even develop into depression. We become sleep deprived, prayer deprived, and if we continue at this pace, we can become Holy Spirit deprived. It can become a vicious cycle, a merry-go-round, if you will, often a merry-go-round of guilt, because we can't do it all. Because we're letting God down. Because we're depressed over our failures, our shortcomings, what we haven't got done. How long the list to do still is. Yet there doesn't seem to be any apparent way to stop. There was a musical a number of years ago that basically said, "Stop the world, I'd like to get off." I wouldn't recommend the musical necessarily. But for trivia buffs, Sammy Davis Jr.'s "What Kind of Fool Am I?" comes out of the movie version of that particular story. Subject of today's split sermon is exhaustion. Exhaustion. How did we get here? What might be causing it? And most importantly, what can we do to reduce it? I don't know, but I haven't talked to many lately who say, "You know, I get up in the morning refreshed, feeling powerful and strong, ready to tackle the day." It's like, the alarm? It can't be this soon. Last year, the American Psychological Association stated that, quote, "When looking by generation, Gen Z adults," those are adults born 1996 and after, so they'd be 18 to 23, 24, something like that now, "they report the highest average stress level of any generation, followed by Gen Xers," those are born 65 to 76, "then millennials," who are born from 77 to 95, "and then baby boomers, then older adults." They all have significantly less stress levels, the boomers and the older adults, than the younger ones. And that's an interesting thing. This year, Gen Z adults report the highest stress level during the prior month on an average 6.1 out of 10. This is significantly higher than all other generations. So our youngest seem to be the most exhausted, the most stressed, the most challenged in this regard. This is significantly higher than all other generations, 5.6 for millennials, 5.2 for Gen X, 4.0 for boomers, and 3.3 for older adults. Now, I can say that's certainly the case for my 91-year-old mother. Yeah, whatever. She doesn't have to go out. Her kids bring her all her food, bring her her meals. What does she have to be stressed about? The potential long-term consequences of this persistent stress, the American Psychological Association continues, this persistent stress and trauma created by the pandemic are particularly serious for our country's youngest individuals, known as Gen Z. Our 2020 survey shows that Gen Z, Generation Z teenagers, who are 13 to 17 now, and Gen Z adults, 18 to 23, are facing unprecedented uncertainty and are experiencing elevated stress and are already reporting symptoms of depression. Another survey showed that the most stressed individuals in the world is the United States. Interesting. You wonder how that ties into prophecy, of course, and the curses for disobedience to God's way. But I'd like to begin by getting your participation in the sermon. Write something down in your notes if you're a note taker, or have it in your head if you're not a note taker. But ask this of yourself: what is my level of exhaustion? And I'll give you some options. Where do you fit in this continuum? My level of exhaustion is low. Low. Low exhaustion. My life's a breeze. Not that big a deal. Nothing that's stressful. How about medium? Medium level of exhaustion. Some days are tough, but you know, most not too bad. How about high exhaustion? I frequently feel exhausted. I never really feel at rest. Not really at peace. Most times it's just kind of this level of stress and exhaustion. Or how about the last one? Alarm. The alarm level. The dial has reached that red zone, and life is beating me up. I am always exhausted. I mean, I'm in the red zone. And I don't mean touchdowns for football. I mean that stress level, that exhaustion level has hit the red zone, the danger zone. So write down in your notes where you feel you are at this point. And then we can ask ourselves, what is it in my life that might be causing this level of exhaustion? Of just fatigue, of overwhelming, feeling overwhelmed. Is it my job demands? Demands on the job. Some will say, well, I'm retired. I don't have job demands in the same way. Maybe school demands. If you're going to school virtually. Of course, when I was a kid and they said you're going to school virtually, that meant you're really not there. I virtually went to school. That means I almost went to school but didn't. Well, that's very different meaning today, isn't it? How about driving to work? And of course, we have to have in this list pandemic protocols. Is that leading to our level of exhaustion? We always have to be on edge, always watching out, always worried about, am I going to get this? Am I going to give it to someone else? How about children? Is that causing a level of exhaustion in our lives? Having them, caring for them, educating them, correcting them, guiding them, teaching them God's way? For some, that can be very exhausting. How about spiritual demands? Yeah, we do have spiritual demands to pray, to study, to fast, to meditate, acts of service to others. Those are all spiritual demands on us that can lead to exhaustion. Let me ask ourselves this question. It might be difficult to jot down at this point what exactly is causing our level of exhaustion, especially if you were in the high or the alarm sections. How many hours of sleep did I get last night? Do I feel rejuvenated after sleep? Because that's what sleep is supposed to do. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. I remember my father saying at one point, and maybe this is an age-related thing, but he said, I don't understand how I can go to bed feeling just fine and wake up in the morning with all kinds of aches and pains. Like, how is it? It's supposed to be the opposite. Ecclesiastes 5 in verse 12. The sage here in Ecclesiastes is just commenting on life. Now we understand... It says he's the preacher. He's kind of ruminating about life. And he says this in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet. Do we find sleep to be sweet in our lives? Is it a rejuvenating thing? Some people drop into bed completely and totally exhausted and wake up feeling pretty much the same. That's sad. Sometimes physical ailments don't allow us to sleep well. That's a bit of a different story, but still can be a challenge. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, it says, whether he eats little or much. It's just great to have rejuvenating sleep. Then it goes on to say, the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. There's this stress level. It maybe it's protecting the riches that we have. Maybe it's the worry that they'll disappear and we won't have them anymore. Sleep is designed by God to be a rejuvenating episode of our lives. And when we think about that we spend, or probably don't, but are supposed to spend about a third of our lives asleep, boy, it's key to so many things. So is this part of our exhaustion issue, not being able to sleep? Now, when it says the sleep of the laboring man is sweet, it's because he puts his things aside, he's worked hard, she's worked hard, and he goes to sleep, having accomplished something in that day, having labored, whether it's a physical labor, most likely here, obviously, or whether it's a mental labor. Some of us have a great deal of trouble shutting off when it comes time to go to bed. The mind is worrying with so many things, and sometimes worrying, but worrying with so many things that we can simply remain in this situation of exhaustion. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 31. Jeremiah chapter 31. Jeremiah talks about a wonderful dream that he had. Someday we're going to ask God about dreams. Like, what are these things? And what's their purpose? I mean, this is just dream. Now, we're not talking about visions that God directly gave, those kind of dreams. But why does the mind dream? What does it do? How does it? Is it a part of the processing of life? Is it part of the brain storing information? As I've said before, my wife remembers many of her dreams. I almost never have a dream that I remember. And I wonder why that is the case. I don't know. But nonetheless, Jeremiah has this dream. It's a wonderful dream. It's a vision of Judah's future. In the kingdom. After they've repented, they've turned to God, God blesses them. In Jeremiah 31, in verse 26, he wakes up. After this, in other words, he sees this vision of the world tomorrow, this beautiful dream. Ever have a dream like that you didn't want to wake up from? But he says, after this I awoke and looked around, and he says, my sleep was sweet to me. Isn't that the way we want sleep to be? Rejuvenating? It was sweet. But now we're ready to get up, and we're ready to get about our day. When we get exhausted, we ask ourselves, what gets left undone? When our schedule is so full and we're just beat, what gets left undone? I've listed a few things you can think about. See what might ring true with your life. When we get exhausted, what gets left undone? Does time with God get left undone? We just get exhausted. Too much to do. Too much to think about. Too much to go on. Does time with God get left undone? Our prayer and our Bible study get pushed out. How about time with spouse or family or children or grandchildren maybe? Does that get pushed out of the way or just left undone? It's not that we don't want to do it. There's just not enough hours in the day. How about time with our children? Time with service to others. Does that get left undone? When we get exhausted, when we're overbooked, how about time with a hobby or with leisure activities? You know, I'd like to do that, but there's just no time. Busy becomes the enemy often. that we simply can't seem to get around. When we get exhausted, what are we missing? Well, we can go through each of those again and say, well, when I get exhausted, I'm missing a closer or stronger relationship with God. It's kind of a guilt relationship then. I'm sorry, God. Starting all of our prayers with, I'm sorry that I haven't, and I should be, but I... Same thing with spouse or family. I'm sorry I haven't been able to, ... Same with our children. I would like to. I would look back on our children's time, or time with our children. I just feel guilty because I didn't spend the kind of time that I should. No, I heard that prayer request, but I didn't pray about that. Now I heard an update, and it's no thanks to me that the person's better or the situation is resolved. I didn't pray about it. Time serving others. And certainly those hobbies that we may have started years ago and are still sitting there because we just don't have the time to get back. We're exhausted. How do we get off the merry-go-round? It's the tyranny of the urgent, is it not? It takes over. What is most urgent? What do I have to do today? What do I have to do this hour before lunch or before dinner, before I go to bed? What do I have to do? How do we get off the tyranny of the urgent, the merry-go-round of exhaustion? Well, I have a couple suggestions that might help that I'm trying to work on in my life and might be beneficial for you as well. The first one is ask God for help. That should be obvious. We all probably do that. Ask God for help. Ask God for solution. Turn to Matthew chapter 11, if you would. Matthew chapter 11, and we'll read verse 28. Matthew 11 and verse 28. Christ is speaking here, and he's talking about his people. He mentions in verse 25 that God has hidden many of these wonderful spiritual truths from the wise and the prudent. And he's not disrespecting you, by the way, saying, as all these unwise, imprudent people know the truth. No, he's not talking about that. He's talking about culture and society. Those who are wise or in these positions of authority, and you just, you know, talked about Bethsaida and Corridon and the situation that they simply were not taking thought about what was happening in their cities, the miracles that Christ was doing. You've hidden these things from the wise and prudent and revealed them to babes. That's a compliment to you. God has revealed them to the innocents, not to the great of the culture, but to innocent hearts. That's his people. Even so, Father, for it seemed good in your sight, all things have been delivered to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and the one to whom the Son wills to reveal him. That's you again. And then he gives us this solution, we might say, to constant exhaustion. He says, come to me. Come to me. All you who labor and are heavy laden. And I would say that probably describes most of the culture these days. We're just over the top, laboring. It's not that we're doing foolish things necessarily, but the calendar is just packed. You know, it's interesting that we've been told, and I think accurately so, that we have all these spectacular, really, labor-saving devices. Isn't that amazing? I can take my filthy, dirty clothes, put them in this machine, touch the button, and a half hour later, they're all clean. They're all by themselves. You ever see that one video of the fellow who says, I've got this. His wife is so upset with him. He said, will you just clean up after yourself? And he said, it's amazing. I don't have to. Got this. We've got this magic coffee table. And she said, what? Yeah, I can leave dirty dishes and pizza boxes and things like that on this coffee table. And I get up in the next morning, and it's perfectly clean. And the same thing is true in the laundry basket. I can put all these filthy, dirty clothes in there one day and come back a day or two later, and they're all clean and folded. It's magical. And of course, she's rolling her eyes during this time. And she says, no. And he said, maybe it's just chosen me. It's a hilarious little video. My son happened to show me that. But isn't it true we've got all these labor-saving devices, but does this give us all kinds of free time now? Or are all those minutes that would have been taken scrubbing out those clothes and hanging them up to dry and doing all those things just filled with something else? Are we less busy because of all of our labor-saving devices? And the answer is absolutely not. Something else has taken its place. So he says, come to me. There is peace in praying to God and putting these things on his shoulders. We had a children's song many years ago that we still sing to this day. I cast all my cares upon you. I lay all of my burdens at your feet. And anytime I don't know what to do, I cast all my cares upon you. Beautiful little piece. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That is a promise. It's not just a suggestion, it's a promise. So to put these things on his plate, on his very capable shoulders, is the way to function. I will give you rest, mental rest, spiritual rest, even physical rest. Verse 29, take my yoke upon you. In other words, work for the right things. A yoke is a symbol of working. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So put those things on God's shoulders. We can do some things, but many of the things that exhaust us really are out of our hands. When it comes to mental exhaustion, the emotional exhaustion that can come upon us because of family situations, because of work situations, because of societal situations, we really cannot do anything about those things. So to put it on his shoulders, making our burden lighter, is what he asks us to do. It's a wonderful blessing. It's a wonderful proposal that Christ gives us. Turn to Psalm 94. Psalm 94, in verse 14. Again, another promise here. Especially good to read when we're feeling overwhelmed and the culture around us is closing in on us, and the challenges out there are troubling, to say the least. Psalm 94, in verse 14. We're told, for the Lord, the Eternal, will not cast off his people. The word cast off can also be translated abandon. God will not abandon his people, nor will he forsake his inheritance. God makes a promise that he will help. We have to turn to him. We have to ask him repeatedly. And as we see him give peace, give rest, give relief from mental and spiritual and emotional exhaustion, as well as physical exhaustion, our relationship with him is strengthened. So, suggestion number one, ask God for help and solution. Number two, reduce your screen time. Reduce your screen time. Many people are unaware that increased screen time causes increased exhaustion. It also causes increased stress and tension in a person's life. Now you might say, well, no, I'm doing screens for entertainment. Well, research shows the opposite. So think about your screen time. And of course, during 2020, for most people, screen time has increased exponentially, especially for our children. If they're doing online schooling, virtual schooling, their screen time is over the top. So ask yourself, how much time do I spend in front of a screen each day? That means a computer screen, a television, an iPad, a tablet, a notebook, a phone, devices of all sorts. Is it low? My screen time is low, less than an hour a day. Yeah, right. The average adult before the pandemic spent 2.25 hours on their smartphone per day. Average. Okay, how about medium, 2 to 5 hours a day? Trust me, it's more than you think. Now there's a feature I learned as preparing this. I learned that there's a feature on my iPhone that I turned on so I could see. And that actually logs during how much time in a day that you are actually on the phone. And the one caveat they said is that make sure that when you turn that on, that you reduce your sleep thing on the phone. I don't know what it's called. But when you look at your phone and you touch a button and the screen stays on for so many minutes until it shuts off by itself to be a power-saving thing, make sure you set that to the lowest amount. Because otherwise, if you have it set at 5 minutes, every time you touch your phone, it logs 5 minutes. Well, I wasn't on my phone for 5 minutes, but it was just sitting there with the screen turned on. So anyway, I'm going to find out how much time I'm spending on that blasted device. Is it 2 to 5 hours a day? That's medium. Is it high? 8 to 10 hours a day in front of a screen, a TV, a tablet, a notebook, a phone. How about alarm? More than 10 hours a day. And some of our young people are in that range now because they're spending hours a day in front of the computer for school. And then hours of the day for entertainment or relaxation or communicating with friends. The American Academy of Pediatrics says today's children are spending an average, this was prior to COVID, an average of 7 hours a day on entertainment media, including televisions, computers, phones, and electronic devices. So that's most of their day outside of school at that time. The average 8 to 10-year-old in the U.S. spends around 8 hours a day in front of a screen. Teens may spend as many as 11 hours a day. Many children spend more time interacting with media than sleeping or going to school. And at that time, what did they recommend? No more than 2 hours of screen time per day. Now, it's, of course, that's changed in the last 12 months, 10 months. From Architectural Digest, while technology and screens help us stay connected, excessive screen time can be detrimental to your health. Researchers have discovered how low levels of happiness are associated with increased smartphone usage. And interesting, because constantly comparing ourselves to others. And feelings of loneliness are associated with social media use. More time on social media, the higher sense of isolation. Moreover, they continue, excessive device usage negatively impacts sleep and makes one more susceptible to obesity. Isn't that interesting? I know that it's certain. What they'll often recommend is that get off all screens an hour before you go to bed. At least a half an hour before you go to bed. But an hour is better. And I know at times that I'm watching something before I go to bed. What am I always doing? I'm also eating while I'm watching. Oh, it's just to relax. It's just to take it easy. It's just to have a complete change of pace. Yeah, yeah. How much did I eat? I have no idea, but the bag's empty now. So it must have been the whole bag. I don't know. Goes on to say, there are already heightened levels of stress and anxiety due to the coronavirus pandemic, and additional screen time can only worsen these levels. That's from Architectural Digest, of all places. So, have I ever interrupted my prayer to read or answer a text? Have I ever heard my phone while I'm praying and immediately after amen jumped up to get it? Who was it? What is it all about? Have I ever surfed the internet while talking to my kids? Or taking my kids to the park? Or taking my kids outside to play? I mean, we have been several times this summer with grandkids at the playground and seeing other parents whose kids are playing and they're there on their phone with no interaction with them whatsoever. That's really, really sad. What's most important? Have I ever asked a live person that I'm sitting with to repeat what they were saying because I was texting or felt I needed to be texting? There are some sources that recommend one of the greatest ways to reduce screen time is read a real book. A real book, the kind that has pages that you have to turn, made out of paper, as opposed to read the next page, read the next page, read the next page. They recommend if you could read for 30 minutes before bed, you will fall asleep faster, sleep more soundly. I don't know the research that's behind that, but that's their recommendation. Get outside when possible. Away from the screen. Look at what nature has to offer, what God has created and the beautiful creation that He has there. Screens have taken over our lives. Fight the machine. Don't let it lure you into subservience. Suggestion number 3. Jettison some cargo. Jettison some cargo. What unnecessary cargo is cluttering up my life? What can I throw overboard and still be fine? When we say jettison, the word jettison means to cast goods overboard in order to lighten a vessel or aircraft or to improve its stability in an emergency. I thought that was an interesting definition. Obviously, we're talking about throwing things overboard that are unnecessary for our lives. But it also improves stability in an emergency. We've got some space. Turn to Isaiah 55. What might I be able to jettison, to throw overboard? What is taking up time and maybe emotional energy in my life that I can set aside? Isaiah 55 and verse 2. Isaiah is asking a question of Israel. It's kind of a rhetorical question, but it's good for us to ask the question of ourselves. Why, he says, do you spend money? Literally, the Hebrew is, why do you weigh out silver? You know, you're buying. Why do you spend money for what is not bread? And your wages for what does not satisfy? Are there things in our lives that really are not essential? Listen, he says, carefully to me, and eat what is good. And let your soul delight itself in abundance. The point is, we're putting first things first, and some things we're simply setting aside. There may be some activities you're involved in that just take time. And maybe that is something that really can be set aside. We can analyze what it is we're spending our time on. One of the most helpful things for me personally many years ago, it's actually back in the Worldwide Church of God, was that a number of us as pastors were asked to log every single minute of our day to see what did we spend time doing. And it was for the purpose of helping newer pastors kind of understand, here's how your day, your week, your month may shape up to be. And what was interesting is to see how much time was spent in each of these activities. Maybe that's something you could try. It was really, in one sense, a very difficult process because all of a sudden I realized, wow, this was before internet was very big. There was time spent on things that really didn't produce anything, that really weren't necessary, really weren't all that helpful. Like when you're kind of embarrassed when you have to say, well, I spent 15 minutes looking out the window. But now I realize that was probably 15 minutes really well spent. Just looking out the window. With nothing on the plate, nothing that has to be done right at this moment, or what has to be done can be delayed a little bit, because looking out the window can be a wonderful thing. I've often wondered in my younger years about why old people like bird feeders so much. Ever wondered that? I'm beginning to appreciate that more than I ever did before. To see these beautiful birds. I was out hunting recently, and you may not realize, but cardinals flock together in the wintertime. And to see a dozen red cardinals highlighted against the beautiful snow and just sit there and say, that is awesome. These bright red birds against the white snow, it's just beautiful. Awesome. So we ask, do I have my priorities correct? Am I spending my time on earth and this week and this day on what is truly important? What can I throw out in order to reduce my level of exhaustion? What can I jettison? What can I set aside? What am I involved with that I don't need to be involved? What do I watch that I don't need to watch? What am I doing that I don't need to do? Everything, it seems, is important, but there is a level of priority that has to be determined. All right, number four. Suggestion number four. Build silence into your life. Build silence into your life. This corresponds at least a little bit with the reducing screen time, but Mark chapter 1 in verse 35. Mark chapter 1 and verse 35. Christ sets an example here. He didn't have to contend with electricity and all the curses on one hand that brings and all the blessings on the other hand. But he didn't have screens to deal with. At the same time, he was constantly in demand. People always wanted to be around. They always wanted to talk to him. They always wanted to be blessed by him. They always wanted to be fed by him, to take care, to be healed by him. Always in demand. So what did he do? In the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed into a solitary place, and there he prayed. I think we told you the story that a few months ago we were outside after dark, a couple hours after dark, with our grandson. And I think it really was the first time in his little four-year life, that he'd been outside that much after dark. And we just pointing out the stars, and he was just so impressed with the stars. And his comment at the time was, Yoder, there's 71 stars up there. Because for him, in his little mind, 71 was like the biggest number you could think of. No concept of how much 71 is or isn't, but he was just so impressed with that. And to be out in the morning or late at night and to be looking up at those stars, I would think Christ felt a little closer to God as he prayed in that kind of setting. But he went into the wilderness apart, by himself, to silence. Silence is the best way to pray. We can't always have silence when we pray, necessarily, but to pray. If you were out at all this week, one of the mornings I was out, this beautiful light snow falling. And every once in a while where I was, the traffic would stop, and it was just absolute silence. There's something so restful and relaxing about silence. Silence is golden, the song said, and there's a truth to that. Turn to Matthew 6 in verse 6. Matthew 6 and verse 6. There's something about silence that just leads us to a connection with God a little bit more closely than might otherwise. So, I mean, we can pray while we're driving. We can pray while, you know, we're at work if we need to be and there's busyness going on around us, but nothing like a private, quiet place to pray. Matthew 6 in verse 6. When you pray, but when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut the door, you know, get it quiet. Pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees you in secret will reward you openly. What a wonderful blessing that is. Prayer. Silence for silence's sake. 15 minutes looking out the window, watching the birds, appreciating God's creation. It does wonders for our mental state, because exhaustion is not almost never just a physical thing. It's almost always a mental thing. Now, it may have physical aspects to it, but it's almost always an emotional or mental or spiritual state that goes along with it. So unplug, unhook, untether, turn off the machines, build some silence into your life. Notice 1 Thessalonians 4. We'll close with this. 1 Thessalonians 4. If you turn there to chapter 4, we'll read beginning in verse 9. Paul is writing to the church here and encouraging them in some just very general and basic issues about living the Christian life. And one of the things that he says, I think is quite interesting about silence, about quietness. 1 Thessalonians 4 in verse 9. But concerning brotherly love, he says, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. And so for the church at Thessalonica, it seemed that they naturally cared for each other. And they had God's instruction about loving each other, but they just seemed to do that very well. Verse 10, and indeed you do so toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. So of all the congregations that Paul seemed to write to, this congregation seemed to have this natural care for others, not just in their congregation, but the entire region. If they heard of another area of the brethren that were suffering, they were the kind of ones that would put a food bank together and ship it up there to take care of them, to pray for them, etc. But he goes on to say, but we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more. Keep at it. Keep serving. Keep caring for each other. And we would say the same thing to our congregations as well, to ourselves. And then verse 11 makes me think that the Thessalonians were very, very busy people, taking care of all these things, doing all these things, helping others. But then he says, verse 11, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life. A quiet life. Silence is a good thing. To live a quiet life. Then he says, to mind your own business. So as I said, the Thessalonians were busy with everything. They're helping, they're serving others. And sometimes when you're in that situation, you know everybody's business. And you're involved with everybody's business. He says, mind your own business. Now, he's not doing that to insult them, but, you know, take care of this. Mind your own business. Work hard. Work with your own hands as we commanded you. Don't freeload off others. Work hard yourself. Work with your own hands. Verse 12, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside and that you may lack nothing. The old, what we have referred to in America as the Protestant work ethic is true. It's a good and a right thing. It's not a Protestant work ethic by any means. It is God's ethic. Work with your own hands as we commanded you. There's a time of life that we do that. Then there's a time of life, of course, that we retire. We don't work quite so much with our hands, and that's okay. Mind your own business. Work with your own hands as we command you. Don't freeload off of others, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside and lack nothing. So, to build silence into our lives, to lead a quiet life, is something that can be wonderful for God's people. So if we're exhausted, if we find ourselves constantly exhausted, let's ask for God's help and solution. Let's think about reducing our screen time. Let's jettison some cargo and build some silence into our lives. If we do so, I think we'll find what Matthew 11:28 told us. Come to me, all you who are heavy laden, who are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. But if we do these things, we'll find ourselves just a bit more refreshed than we may have been when we began this day. Thank you.